From the director of Time Bandits and 12 Monkeys comes the adventure of Don Quixote.
Cut, cut, cut. What's going on?
I've been fantasizing this for a very long time.
He gets tangled and whoop, off his horse.
The budget is half the money we need.
There'll be a thing so they can walk down.
Captain Chaos.
Wow!
He's completely in his element.
Really violent.
This film is in complete disarray.
This week on PrimeFlix, the perils of filmmaking in the documentary Lost in La Mancha.
I have an actor.
Roll camera.
Your horse about to move. Come on, horsey.
Cut!
A very strange weather today.
There's a large bunch of lightning about to hit us.
Everything that can go wrong goes wrong.
Yes!
Nobody seems to be in control of anything.
We can't make the film.
Welcome to another episode of PrimeFlix, the 15-minute film discussion podcast. My name is Ed. I am your host, and with me this week is my co-host, Jim.
Hey, Ed.
Each episode of PrimeFlix focuses on discussing a film that's currently available to stream on Netflix or Amazon Prime. This week's selection is on Netflix. I don't believe it's on Amazon Prime. Before we get started, I'd like to mention a few things. First, you know, it's always, as we've recorded, currently available on Netflix or Amazon Prime. You know, that's current as of the date and time of this recording. Because of licensing content and all that kind of stuff, we're unable to guarantee that it is still available. But, you know, stuff goes on and off of Netflix all the time. So if it's not available when you listen to this, maybe it will be available shortly thereafter. Or if you want to shell out a couple bucks, you can actually get it through a service like Amazon. So you might be out of luck, but just wait around, see what happens. The second thing I want to mention is that this is a film discussion podcast, not necessarily a film review type of podcast. So we're here to kind of get into the nitty-gritty of discussing the film we've already seen. So if you've not yet seen the film, I would not recommend listening to this unless you want things spoiled for you, because we will talk about things that would spoil the film. In this case, it's a documentary, so maybe it's not as much of a spoiler as you might imagine, but there will certainly be spoilers, so please be aware of that while listening to this. So this week's film is Lost in La Mancha. It's currently available to stream on Netflix, as I mentioned. It has a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. Could not find a rating for it on Metacritic, because it's a little bit of an older film, and Metacritic only goes back a few years. It has a 7.3 on IMDb and a 3.3 on Netflix, on the actual Netflix rating system. And it basically covers the trials and tribulations of Terry Gilliam's repeated attempts to make a film based on Don Quixote. So this is a very, very interesting movie from both the perspective of being a Terry Gilliam fan and also being just a general movie fan. Jim, what were your thoughts on this film?
I feel like it's definitely more about the tribulations than anything else, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's obviously like, it seems very Sisyphean almost, that he's going to keep trying to make it and it's going to keep punching him in the face and not being able to go through with it. It's very much about the filmmaker as well. And I think you had mentioned that it kind of changed your opinions a little bit of Terry Gilliam.
All right, yeah, I think like you, I'm a big Gilliam fan. I don't know anybody who isn't. He's an incredible filmmaker. At the same time, there are so many things about this movie that I'm easy to please, but this movie set everything up for failure. Like, I left with a lower opinion of Gilliam than I had started with, and that was almost from the opening scene. Like, when they were doing the kind of the intro for, like, how long he's been trying to do this film, they talked about Baron von Munchausen or whatever.
Yep. The Adventures of Baron von Munchausen.
And they basically said, I've never seen it, so I have no point of reference. To me, if it's a Gilliam film, I'm thinking, well, maybe it's great. But they start out this film by saying how crappy that film was, and saying, like, this is what Gilliam's coming off of, so you're in for a treat. I don't know.
I think I went back, and there are a few things regarding Gilliam's movies specifically. There are a few things that I wanted to go back and see. So I had seen Time Bandits. I had seen Adventures of Baron von Munchausen. I'd seen a couple of his other films, and when they were in Brazil, obviously, and when they were mentioning his film work, they were saying, oh, he's done all these great movies. I was like, that's not all of them. They're not mentioning all of the films that he's done.
Oh, man.
Because I know he's made more than that, and I've seen more than that. And I was, it's, you know, not worth going into. But anyway, Baron von Munchausen is just an okay movie. It's not great. It's one of those cult types of films because it's so strange. And that's his style. But yeah, I think there's something admirable, but also kind of, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth about somebody who's so unwilling to compromise on things.
Yeah.
You know, and this film really illustrates that really well about, you kind of start to think, well, if he had made some compromises, this film could have easily been made. But because he refused to, you sort of see the film and nature punishing him for that.
Yeah, it almost does feel like that. Like everything is punishing Gilliam through the entire film. At the start, when they introduce the character that, or the actor that he had chosen to play Don Quixote, like the main character in this film, your first thought is, this is perfect. This guy, I can see why Gilliam fell in love with this actor. That this is the quintessential Don Quixote. It's ideal. But by the end of the film, you find, I mean, that's probably his biggest mistake, is falling in love with this actor and not having any backup plan at all. Because the man's an old, I mean, what, how old was he? He was something like,
he's 70s? In his 70s. Yeah.
Like old enough where being on a horse, I don't care how good of shape you're in, people should be worried, genuinely worried about putting you on a horse in front of a camera.
I mean, and it takes two people to put you onto and take you off of the horse.
That's when they should have just stopped. Like, as soon as that one moment happened. Also, why didn't they have, like, a stunt person or something? Like, they...
Yeah.
Gilliam has workarounds. Like, he's a... The most admirable thing he does in this film is his mantra of keep filming.
Mm-hmm.
Or keep shooting. We're just going today. I don't care what we have. We're going to shoot. And that's from the very beginning. Like, they have the... Do you remember the Giants?
Yeah. Yeah. That was great, actually.
Yeah. My favorite part of the movie. And they bring him back, like, after the credits, too, which is kind of cool. Like, in full garb. I don't know.
I think it's interesting because, you know, going back to your discussion of Roquefort as Don Quixote, he was so perfect. But at the same time, he's French and had to learn English to do the role.
For 7 months.
Yeah, and it's like, at that point, wouldn't you just say, you know what, there's a lot of fish in the sea. There's probably an American actor or an English actor that we could find who would look the part, and, you know, and this actually, it's interesting that they mentioned that Orson Welles also had a problem with this, almost the same problem, basically, where the guy who he picked to play Don Quixote in his version actually died, right? And so they couldn't finish the filming.
Same problem, sure.
Yeah. With, you know, I mean, this movie was made in 2002, so I don't even know when they were filming Lost in La Mancha. Obviously, Johnny Depp looks very young in the movie when they're showing him. And so, you know, maybe this was mid-90s when they were trying to film this movie. But, you know, special effects and makeup and stuff has come a long way. You could probably have a younger 50s-ish actor who you could make look a little bit older who could play him.
Aren't they using Val Kilmer to play, like, Mark Twain right now with the same kind of thing? Like,
that's amazing. I didn't know that, so...
I mean, they're doing a lot of things with makeup that... And this isn't new technology, like with prosthesis and all of the work that goes into makeup already. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's definitely, you're onto something there.
Yeah,
I did research this, though. It was 2000 when they were trying to film it.
2000, okay, yeah. So, interesting how old 2000 looks now in 2013. I like the kind of the way that they dressed and stuff seem very dated. But that's beside the point. The thing that frustrated me most about this, and I think this was entirely the intention of the film, was that watching the few things that they had recorded and seeing the sort of the behind the scenes, like the puppet soldiers and all that stuff, it made me so badly wish this movie had been made.
Yes. Oh, man. Absolutely. Like, everything about it. Like, every time they showed With the one exception of showing how bad of condition the Quixote actor was in, every other shoot from the movie looked like an incredible Gilliam movie. Like, they looked like, when they're building the set pieces, there's these intricate, enormous stature, like, carnival pieces that they're building. The puppets were incredible. The giants were incredible. Everything that we see looks really good and funny and well made.
Yeah.
And now, you're kind of in this, by the end of the movie, it is heartbreaking that this movie, you know how much he wants to make it. You know how much the rest of the actors want to make it. And now we don't get to see it. At least, you know, 10 or 11 years ago when this was made. Did you hear who they're going to get for the... Because he hasn't given up. It sounds like he... when this failed, the rights to this script, this Quixote script, went to the insurance company. And it sounds like Gilliam just bought those rights back recently in the last 5 years or so. And so he's been trying to make it again. And did you hear who they're eyeing or who's, like, kind of attached to the script for the primary character? Robert Duvall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
they pulled out all the stops on that one, I suppose.
It said there's a Wikipedia page for The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. That's the name of the Terry Gilliam one. And it says, on the hour with George Stephanopoulos, or whatever the hell the giant Greek name is, in 2009, Gilliam revealed that Robert Duvall would play the role of Don Quixote. Johnny Depp remained attached to the project, but because he's signed for two Disney films, further production delays are expected. Like, it's already setting itself up for failure again, just because he's so attached to other people.
Duvall's got to be in his 80s, right? Right. Or close to it, so he's older. That's crazy.
I mean,
interesting.
I like the idea of using an older actor. I mean, it sure seems like that would be honest, but it does seem like it was a decade ago. This was your primary problem. Don't tell me Duvall's going to be the only choice we've got. Tell me you've got at least two or three others in the reserves, you know, or a really strong stuntman who looks just like him.
That's insane. I think they actually did have a double for the guy who's playing Quixote in this one. If there's one scene where he's sitting next to a guy who looks exactly like him, or like a younger version of him, he has the same beard and everything. So I'm assuming that guy was his stunt double. So I don't know for sure, but I think that's what it was. For the horse riding and stuff, they're gonna have to. I'm going to have to be very, very careful.
What would you have done differently if you were in his shoes, or the shoes of the assistant director?
Well, for starters, I would have, I think, scouted the location more, done more research on, you know what I mean? Like, if you're in that kind of an environment. Yeah, by an airbase, you have these crazy, kicking up these crazy amounts of rain and stuff that are basically wash out all of your equipment. Like, I don't know enough about this, but that seems to me like that would be something that you could do a little research on. Like, what's the weather like there usually?
when they said that they're next to an airbase, but it shouldn't be a problem because it only happens an hour a day, but he couldn't tell you what hour a day that was.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, what? You've got to... I know this isn't the U.S., but you've got to be able to find this information out. Like,
totally.
That was crazy.
That's another thing about this. You know, people who work in showbiz are notoriously superstitious, and it's easy to see how if you do enough films, and one of them is bound to have a lot of things go wrong, that you do develop that kind of attitude about it that it's cursed, you know, that there's something about this is cursed. Like, so many of the things that happened here, you know, if maybe two of them hadn't happened, things would have gone on as normal. But because a few of them were pretty big problems, all of a sudden you start to think like, man, this shouldn't ever be made. Like, something, some supernatural force is trying to, you know, stop this production. and you wonder if people like Depp, who were associated or affiliated with it, would go, no, I don't want to get involved in that again. That was such a big problem the first time. But it's actually, I mean, I think kind of just to wrap things up a bit here, I think it really is a great film on filmmaking, and it does show you, it almost feels like if the movie had been made, it would have been the special feature on the DVD that you got to see about the production.
And that would have been incredible. It would have been a triumph, you know? Because then we, as the viewer, get to see the finished product and to see all the trials that they went through.
But it didn't happen.
It did not. It did
it
not.
It went down in spectacular flames.
There's one more little point I've got to make.
Yeah.
The thing that made me want to claw my eyes out by the end of the movie is that every person involved, every person that was interviewed, externalized every problem.
Yeah,
everyone
had
that everything's out to get us viewpoint, and no one accepted any responsibility at all. Like, Gilliam didn't say anything he'd want to do differently. Assistant director didn't say anything he wanted to do differently. Everything was someone else's fault. And no one took credit. Like, no one took the blame. No one was like, well, this is... we failed. Instead, it was always someone else.
Yes.
I was just blown away by this. That was when I lost kind of faith in the entire production staff of this film. Except maybe the documentarian.
Yeah. Who soldiered on.
Right, and actually produced his movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that's just a protective thing maybe that they do, where they just say, you know what, I need to distance myself from this, so it's not my fault. You know, it's
sure.
Like, you know, that old commercial, not my fault. Whose fault was it? It's players' fault, it's fans' fault, coach's fault, might even be your fault. You know, like that kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
I think that's just a natural thing people do. But yeah, it would have been nice to have, especially to have Gilliam say, which he obviously is not going to, I'll do this differently next time.
Right. I mean, he's the one person you can hardly say change what you're doing, because he produces things like The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, and you're like, okay, keep doing whatever it is that makes these things great.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know that he's a little bit on the fringe, and you want him to stay on the fringe. If he has to make a Jerry Bruckheimer Don Quixote, you don't want to see that, you know.
That's true. So, I never want to see that.
Yeah. But if he doesn't do it, maybe someone will. So that's another concern.
And
but,
Johnny Depp might be in that as well.
More than likely, if there's four versions of it, if there's four sequels, he'll sign on for all of them. But let's not disparage Johnny Depp any further. That's going to have to be it for this episode. You can find past episodes and additional content at primeflixpod.com. So it's not posted regularly, but I do try to occasionally get on there, post some Netflix news and other types of... if I run across a good blog post talking about films available on Netflix, I try to share it with all of you. So you can get a little bit more of that there. You can send general feedback about the show to feedback@primeflixpod.com. You can tweet us at PrimeFlix. You can go to our main website and click on the web. There's a sidebar there where you can actually leave an audio message, so you can record a review if you want to, or just an audio message. But please note that if you do that, we might broadcast it on the show, so keep that in mind. If you have specific thoughts or comments about Lost in La Mancha, you can do so at the show notes, which is primeflixpod.com/La Mancha. You can find me on the internet elsewhere at Edomaniac on Twitter. You can find Jim at Jim Marcus, J-I-M-M-A-R-K-U-S. Jim also writes great stuff at moreknown.com. And both of us are available on another podcast, Stuff Smart People Like. So if you want to hear us discuss other topics in addition to movies, which we do sometimes on that show, you can do so there. So, got anything else you want to say, Jim?
Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And until next week, happy streaming.